This is Stuart Molina, podcasting from my home in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and talking about the closer of our opening night concert, which is Tchaikovsky's Second Symphony, also known popularly as The Little Russian. The Little Russian is a fairly early work of Tchaikovsky's. He wrote it in his early 30s. And it's important when looking at this piece to understand the influence at the time of a group that was known as the Mighty Five. This was five Russian composers, specifically Rimsky-Korsakov, Mussorgsky, Balakirev, Cesar Cui, and Borodin, who dominated the world of Russian composition at the time. And their idea was that Russian music should be distinctly Russian in a nationalistic sense, featuring Russian sounds. They really were striving to create a Russian school of musical composition. And Tchaikovsky wrestled with this group for his entire composition career. They at times thought he was doing magnificently well, as was the case with this particular symphony, the Second Symphony. And at other times, they harshly criticized him for giving in to the West, giving in to mainland Europe and their style of composition. But in this piece, clearly Tchaikovsky is making a gesture in their direction, as the piece is composed so much around popular Russian folk themes. The first movement, for example, begins with variations on a simple theme that's put forth in the French horn at the very beginning. This theme is going to be developed in a rather lengthy introduction to the first movement. And the idea of an introduction is something that Tchaikovsky will use in his last three symphonies to great effect, in the fourth symphony with a major fete fanfare. And so forth. In the fifth symphony with a heavy Russian folk tune. In the sixth symphony, by an even more dolorous theme in the bassoon. And so forth. So this is early Tchaikovsky experimenting with this form of an introduction that sets the tone of a piece. And the tone that's set here is one of folk music. The theme has a weight to it, but it's not necessarily a sorrowful weight. It's just a natural weight that you find so much in Russian music. At any rate, he takes this theme and presents it several times in variation. The first time, as I played before, just for the horn by itself. Then the bassoon will follow with an accompaniment of pizzicato in the strings. So forth. Then we'll hear it again, this time in the horn once more, but with a more pulsating, more energetic accompaniment in the woodwinds. So he's immediately setting up this idea of, first of all, simplicity, And second of all, the central importance of the folk element in this symphony. He's going to develop this theme more. He's going to bring in kind of this rushing, quick figure in the strings. As another accompaniment figure underneath the melody. And it will build and build and build and build. And then eventually wane once more to return to the simple horn melody, now in octaves, two horns playing. And then finally we hit our first movement proper. The introduction is over and we have a much quicker, he calls allegro vivo, meaning a lively allegro, a lively quick tempo. And he sets up a new theme, first in the woodwinds and then in the strings. So at any rate, what he's giving us is a theme that's kind of, in a sense, a statement. But in another question, there are question marks attached with this statement. Like, what is the pulse? Is it as he notates it in terms of the bar lines, or is it leading towards that final note as he gives us accents and dynamics to indicate? So we don't really know, but at any rate, it's a very exciting, quick theme that's going to develop itself over time in variation. For example, we'll have one variation which extends and moves into new directions, where the strings are being answered by chords in the woodwinds. And so forth. This will now go into a second theme, again, standard sonata form. And the second theme, like so much of Tchaikovsky, is expressive and beautifully melodic. Tchaikovsky was one of the masters of melody in the entire history of music. And this is no exception. Begins in the woodwinds again. It's a beautiful foil to the exciting first theme. And then he'll bring it back as in sonata form to a closing section where the first theme returns, again, very excitedly, and this will bring our first section to a close. In the development section, Tchaikovsky, in usual style, is going to develop ideas from the first exposition section. This is not a very long section. Tchaikovsky is really beginning to find his way as a writer of development sections. He never was a real true master. I would say that Tchaikovsky's strengths were in writing beautiful melodies, exciting orchestral textures, and creating drama in music. But I think he understands this limitation, and so he doesn't belabor anything. What is interesting about this development section is it ends with a section way out of tempo. He slows things down and gives a very grand, slow statement of our first theme. And then we have our return. And in the return, he does what composers at this point usually did in returns, which is give us the first and second theme one more time, different harmonic relations to each other. And then we have a closing section, which will bring the piece to a close. I guess that would be what closing sections tend to do. But here, too, he interestingly brings our motto theme, the theme from the introduction, back at the end. First as a bass line, which will repeat, and then as a full orchestral texture. So let me just give you a little idea of what that's going to sound like. Eventually will wind down into a very short, very abbreviated statement of our opening introduction, ending with the bassoon just on a pedal G over our C minor chord. This is also pretty typically Tchaikovsky. He'll do this a lot in his later symphonies. The G is what he wants ringing in our ear, the fifth part, the fifth tone of the C minor scale. And why does he want this? Because the next movement is going to be in E flat major, which also contains a G in its chord, this time as a third. So he's giving us kind of this aural connection. We hear the G, and then when we hear the E-flat at the beginning of the second movement, we haven't lost the sense of connection between these two movements. The second movement begins with the timpani, and it's clearly setting up a march movement. And the march will stay through this entire movement. It's a very delightful kind of slow movement. In fact, it's not a slow movement at all. It's just a stately march. There's no real angst in this march. It's just simple, straightforward, and delightful. Here again, he gives us a theme at the beginning that he's then going to make variations on as the piece progresses. As I said a moment ago, it begins with just the timpani, which will then be joined with the clarinet and bassoon playing this march melody. Kind of a delightful, simple, beautiful melody, which will then progress into little sub-melodies that will follow, but eventually into a much more expressive answering melody. You're not likely to find much music of Tchaikovsky's that doesn't have some kind of a luscious theme in it. And this one goes like this. Beneath this melody, we still have the march rhythm being played in the clarinet. And so you see he maintains the feeling of a march all the way through. Now the march will have a trio section. Trio refers back to a minuet form, which is an A, B, A form. So if we see the march theme as the A part, the B part is going to be an even simpler melody, a melody that only really lasts two measures, and we hear it first again in the woodwinds. And we're going to hear many variations on this. Probably the most interesting of them is one that has flutes playing a pedal G in triplets and a single clarinet playing the melody. And he keeps it interesting, and as I said before, one of his brilliant aspects as a composer is creating drama And he does here as well through adding textures, through changing the orchestration. And I really think that this trio section is quite a little masterpiece unto itself. We will then return to our original melody, but now there will be new accompaniment figures. First, for example, we'll hear this little triplet figure. Underneath the melody. And then we'll hear the flutes and the clarinets playing almost like a nutcracker-like pipe accompaniment, which will go under the melody. And finally, of course, we'll have a big grand statement. We'll go to its lovely second theme and finally end by disappearing. It starts off soft, almost like a march, a parade approaching, and it ends with the music waning as though the parade is going away. And he also expands time at the end. Let me just play a little bit of this so that you can hear what I mean, in that he closes our theme, but also instead of keeping it in a strict four in the melody, he separates the harmonic events a little bit. Charming end to a charming movement. The third movement is a scherzo, a quick movement. He writes Allegro molto vivace, extremely lively, and it's a piece that's in 3/8. 3/8 meaning 3/8 notes to a measure, but he also writes the piece in 3-measure phrases so that you have the smaller unit of 3/8 notes in a measure, and then 3 measures put together is going to be his phrasing unit. There's a lot of excitement in this particular scherzo, and he starts off without any pretense of introduction or anything. He just jumps right in with a little flourish in the bass and a sparkling melody in the upper strings and then the woodwinds. Gives you an idea of what this spirit is. For those of you who listen to the podcast on Dvorak, I do mention that anytime you have a piece in the Romantic period in a triple meter, you should be looking out for hemiola, a reorganization of 2 sets of 3 to 3 sets of 2. And we do get this as well here. In the middle section of our A section, the larger scherzo A, he gives us a melody which is a 3 in the upper melody and a counter melody that is clearly divided in hemiola. Just wanted to point that out because it's an interesting little through rhythmic motif for our concert. But like all scherzos, it's not just the A section. The B section is no longer in triple time. This is, again, a little bit of a departure, but by the time we reach Tchaikovsky, scherzo really just means a fast movement. It doesn't necessarily any longer mean a fast movement in triple meter as it did back in the time of, let's say, Beethoven. And so the trio section, the B section, is going to be in double meter, 2/8 time. And again, it's going to be a lot about variation, because the melody is simple and very folky, and surprise, surprise, we hear it first in the woodwinds. and so on. Very charming, very, very different in feeling from the scherzo, and that's what trios are basically supposed to do, is serve as a contrast. The trio would be a contrast to the scherzo, and then we will return to the scherzo. At the end of this movement, he's going to bring back our duple meter theme, but with a timpani underneath driving the triplet, driving the 3/8 underneath the 2/8 melody. And then he'll bring the piece to a close like that. But this is how it will sound when we return to the double meter. And so on. One other little interesting thing that he does is in the very, very last moments of this piece, he departs from a three-measure phrase and goes to a standard four-measure phrase, which throws off the audience a little bit. It's almost like the listener is put into a world that they're not used to, but I think it also adds a lot of energy to this ending. Let me just play a little bit of that so you can hear what I'm talking about. I'll do the final 2 3-bar phrases, and then the transition to a 2-bar phrase. And we move right along into the finale. The last movement is another lively movement, Allegro Vivo. And again, is going to have a short theme, which will be repeated many times in different variations. The theme goes like this. Again, a rather simple, straightforward theme, just a scale up and then a figure down. But Tchaikovsky doesn't jump in right away with this theme. Rather, he gives us a series of flourishes at the beginning, which are going to gradually define the melody in a grand style in this very short introduction. Just the first 3 notes, then he's going to extend it. And then finally, the third time, we're going to hear the outline of what the melody will be. Etc. So after this short introduction, we're introduced to our main theme, very simply, with just the first violins playing it softly, and then a series of variations, a couple of counter melodies, and it will build and build and build until we'll have a grand statement of the entire orchestra playing it, and then we'll have a second theme. This is, in fact, a sonata form, and so we do have a contrasting second theme, and again, it's a very beautiful Tchaikovsky lyrical melody. Develop this theme before bringing us back to a closing section, again featuring our opening theme, and we'll get more variations. It's a rather grand and spectacular presentation of our opening theme, in fact, with percussion that's joined us by now, and the full orchestra playing our theme. At the end of our exposition, we'll have a couple of pitches from the orchestra, high and then low, and this will lead us into our development section. This is what that final bit will sound like. So So where is this leading us? Well, this is going to lead us into a section where he's going to develop both of our themes, one after another, and all the time using these long tones underneath. Etc. So we get both themes being used in the development section, and it's all done in four-bar phrases, generally, which then repeat and modulate into a different key, and then we hear again four and four. And so it's a rather angular kind of approach to developing a movement for a symphony, but again, keep in mind Tchaikovsky is young, he's still finding his way in sonata form. And on top of all of these minor flaws, it's a rather spectacular development nonetheless, just by dint of Tchaikovsky's genius. We don't really have a full-fledged return. Rather, the development section ends with sort of the opening theme and goes right into a repetition of the second theme, followed by the closing theme. This will build and build again, and we're going to have more long tones at the end of our closing. And then we have a coda section, a true closing section in which everything gets really fast. He now marks this presto, and the movement gets rather frenetic and crazed as it pushes towards a big finish. Few composers can end a piece as well as Tchaikovsky. This is an ending in the tradition of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, where he knows he's onto something. And he just presses it again and again and again, building more and more excitement and ending with just a flourish of C major. And this wonderful symphony comes to a wonderful and exciting close. Hope I will see you all at the concerts and enjoy.